everyone. Welcome to This Is Whole Life podcast out of Whole Life Church in Orlando, Florida, where we each week dig deeper into the message. I don't know. It just doesn't sound the same coming from my lips as it does from Randy's, but Randy is on vacation. So somebody's got to pretend to be Randy, even if it's someone who does not possess the gift of gab like Randy does. Yes. So I guess we should jump right in. This week was a big week.
You want to introduce yourself?
No, I would rather remain anonymous.
And right next to me, living at what address are you at? So that you can send mail to Melanie Bachman.
Yes,
Melanie Bachman, sitting here.
Melanie Bachman and the person who is
across from her, Lucas.
Yes, hello. Thank you. I knew once I got this started, you would.
I'm just trying to help you, Melanie. You're the host. I'm just trying to help you. This is Ken.
Yeah. Yeah. Randy, please come back from vacation. We miss you.
Desperately.
You better not be listening to this, Randy. Turn it off right now if you are.
Yeah,
he might. He might.
He may. I don't know. I don't know how well it will come depends across on his AirPods, on his Harley.
I was going to say, it depends on how good the Harley riding is right now.
Yeah.
Correct.
My guess is he's not listening to us.
Tough to say. Yes. Episode 485, so.
Oh, it is episode 485. Yeah. Thank you. See, this is a team effort.
Yeah.
15 away from 500.
I know.
Yep. Still got to get those plans ironed out.
Yes. We need plane tickets. I already have a backpack. So
you have a valid passport?
I have a valid passport. I do.
All right. Me too.
Let's do it. Me too.
Let's do this.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. All right. Well, so we're just waiting for someone to send us our plane tickets to 2800 North Orange Avenue. We will be happy to oblige. So we're in the middle of our great, actually, we are getting very close to the end of our great question series.
Technically, we're in the middle.
Yeah, I guess we are.
It's a three-part series.
Three-part series. Yeah. So this is the
halfway
point. Do you want to say it?
The penultimate?
Yes, there we go. I knew Ken would want to say that word. The penultimate.
It's the only big word I know.
Sermon of the series. And we found ourselves in Romans 13 this week. So some big stuff, heavy question. Let me go ahead and read the question that we had for this week so that we can kick things off right. The question that we had was, what happens when you are living right and authorities are not honoring you or abiding by the rules of the land? Do we submit to abuse of power? After all, God placed them there. And this question comes straight out of Romans 13, which says everyone must submit to the governing authorities because they were placed there by mm-hmm. God. So Ken did a very, very good job of keeping his sermon to 25 minutes this week for both services.
Yeah. Which is really the most important thing.
Yes. Yeah, cue the applause. Yeah. So Ken, were you really excited when this question came up? You're like, yes, I've been waiting to talk about this.
I was so excited. Yeah. You know what? We have smart church members and they ask really good questions. These are great questions, and they're definitely a reality that that people have to wrestle with. It was actually a very fun one for me to research. I think I dug deeper into Romans 13 than I've ever dug before. So it was interesting.
Yeah, nice. I think what was most interesting to me about the passage itself was the distinction that you pulled out between submit and obey. Mm-hmm. Especially the military formation idea. And the picture that Paul is painting here is maybe not the one that we would necessarily get if we were just reading it in English.
Absolutely. So I was just curious, Melanie, since you know, biblical languages are more of a thing for you than they are for me. Did you go look it up later to see whether I was right?
No, I trusted you.
Ooh, that is not advised.
I feel like I went out on a limb, but I trusted you.
Oh, I'm disappointed. I really would have wanted you to go double check that. So yeah, no, it was really interesting. It was an interesting study. You know, as I said in the sermon, there's multiple ways that you can. Or there's multiple word choices that Paul could have made in this scripture. What we get translated as submit is a very specific word in Greek that he chooses for this. And I thought it was very interesting the way that it was laid out. And since I have a moment more here, I'll go ahead and read to you a little bit more about the way this gets laid out here, if I can pull it up. So the word that Paul uses signifies a general voluntary arrangement of oneself in a subordinate position. And I think some of the keys there are voluntary arrangement of oneself in a subordinate position. And it really does refer, it was a military term. And I think that when you start thinking about the military, it really makes it a lot easier to kind of grasp the concept that Paul is trying to get across. And again, what really, for me, opened things up for me on this is this is one of those texts that I think has been very abused throughout the centuries. It's been used to support a lot of authoritarian regimes, a lot of people who are kind of trying to, by force, mm-hmm. create something. And they've, you know, even non-Christian rulers have said to Christians, hey, your Bible says you have to submit to the authorities because God put us here. So you have to do what we tell you to do, whether it's whether it goes along with Christian principles, whether it goes along with God's law or not, you need to do it. And when you read this and you start understanding, everyone must put themselves into a voluntary subordinate position to the governing authorities. And you think of it in military terms. And then when you go a little bit further and you see that it says that God, that the authorities are God's servants. Mm-hmm. And the word again that's used in Greek for servants really means that. It means that they are under the authority of God.
Mm-hmm. Doulos.
Yeah, it's.
It seems like it's more like it's a provisional authority. It's authority that is relative to your conduct, because if you are doing things as an authority figure that you're not supposed to be doing, then the authority that you have is reduced.
So the funny thing about this whole thing to me is that people never have a problem with this scripture if the government they like is in power, and they always have a problem with this scripture if the government they don't like is in power. And so I think what, you know, generally you'll hear one Christian quote this scripture to another Christian that isn't on the same political wavelength as they are, and be like, well, just because, but then as soon as the administration's flip-flop, they're like, yeah, but this is not godly power, right? You know, and both sides will flip-flop on this. And I think that what becomes really important for us to understand in all of this is that the Paul is calling for us to be respectful. For instance, and I feel a little bit more comfortable saying this in a podcast than I wanted to up front on Sabbath morning with kids present. So this is a little warning. If you've got a kid listening, you may want to hear what I say before you let them hear what I have to say. But I think it is wildly inappropriate when Christians use the F this president, like, you know, back when Biden was in, it was a big thing to F Joe Biden, right? Mm-hmm. And now I'm seeing the same thing going for Trump, is F Trump. Mm-hmm. Wildly inappropriate, both. Stop it. If you're a Christian, it's vastly inappropriate. You cannot like the person. You cannot like their policies. You can think the person is ungodly. You can disagree with them from a spiritual side of things, but you do not have God's permission to be disrespectful that way. It's not okay. And I think we all struggle with that because we'll get really frustrated with somebody, especially in politics, who is doing things in a way that's harming people, or that we believe is harming people, and rightfully so. I'm not telling you not to be frustrated about it, but I am saying that I think that Paul is trying to say, you know, if in a military situation you're given an unlawful order, you don't have to follow that order. You may get court-martialed still because, you know, your commanding officer told you not to. Or told you to do something, you refuse to do it because you believe a higher authority has given you a different one. You might get court-martialed, but hopefully you'll be vindicated. But what you don't have permission in that process to do is to be disrespectful to the officer that's giving you the illegal command.
So let's talk about this respect. Where's the line of respect? Because, I mean, obviously Paul's not alive in 2025. But my guess is he probably would be wearing a t-shirt that says those whitewashed sepulchers or whatever. So, I mean, he wasn't speaking in complimentary sort of ways. So what is the definition of respectful in this situation?
Yeah, I think that's a fair question. For me, Melanie, I prefer, and I think maybe it's easier for me because maybe I'm in a more privileged position here, but I think for me, where that falls is, what's the most respect that I can show somebody, not where's the line on it. I would rather err on the side of being respectful to somebody who doesn't deserve it than being disrespectful to that person who doesn't deserve it, or to someone who might deserve it more than I understand. Even Paul, like I said, I view Paul, what Paul does when he calls the high priest a whitewashed wall, when he does that.
Wall.
Yeah.
Jesus said sepulcher.
Yeah. When Paul calls the high priest a whitewashed wall, he says, brothers, I didn't realize it was the high priest, for it is written, do not speak evil about the ruler of your people. So as I mentioned, I think he was a little bit more tongue-in-cheek, like the ruler of my people wouldn't be asking something illegal to happen. So how was I to know that he was the high priest?
I mean, you could also apply that to a political figure. Right?
Sure. You could. Here's what I think. I just don't think that you gain a lot of ground by being uncivil. I think there may be a time and a place for it, but I think you better be really prayerful about, you know, the Bible, Ecclesiastes does say there's a time for everything under the sun. So perhaps there is a time to speak in a disrespectful way, but I think that too many people are way too comfortable being disrespectful all the time, whether it's warranted or whether it's just they're frustrated with something or other. And so that's where I just would like, and I just think that our discourse is generally not made better by sarcasm and disrespect. And that's coming from somebody who is very sarcastic and struggles with this and trying to work on that in my life, where I'd just far rather be able to say, I disagree with you and here's why. Mm-hmm. Than, hey, you're an idiot, you moron, why are you thinking that? You know, Jesus, what did Jesus say? Whoever calls his brother an idiot is in trouble, basically. Is
a fool.
Or fool, yeah. I don't know how that translates into Greek, but it wasn't apparently particularly respectful.
Right.
So anyway, that's kind of what I think. But, and that's, I think, what really concerns me about the discourse that I'm seeing in the area that I'm familiar with, which is American life, that it feels like we've just become very disrespectful with those that we disagree with, that the civil conversation. That doesn't mean that you can't be passionate, but calling people names, calling people who disagree with you dumb, or weak, or whatever else, I don't think that's particularly helpful.
Well, it's a breakdown, and it really is a breakdown in dialogue, because you're not continuing a conversation, you're shutting a conversation down, because the walls of defensiveness go up. Nobody's listening to anybody, and it's just a barrage of barbs that are happening. I think social media is really hard, and it's actually been really hard for me lately. You know, because I feel like I can't go anywhere on social media and not be just lambasted with vitriol coming from the screen. And I think that for me, I think it really is not good for my mental health or my attitudes toward people, whether I agree with them or not. It doesn't help my feelings about the discourse.
It feels like we forget how to be comfortable with people that think differently than us. Mm-hmm. Like, we, at the end of the day, we just need, you know, agree to disagree and move on.
I think that works to a certain degree, because agree to disagree about ideas, sure. Yeah, we can agree to disagree on theology or politics or foreign policy, or, you know, whether salsa should be mild, medium, or hot. But But where we can't agree to disagree is when people are being hurt. I won't agree to disagree with you on whether or not someone should have rights or whether or not someone should be treated with dignity or anything like that. Like that's, I won't agree to disagree on that.
So what does that mean to you though, Melanie, when you say you won't agree to disagree, what does that look like then when you don't agree to disagree?
So for example, you know, if trans people are being kicked out of the military and people are, treating trans people badly, and especially now with the heightened tension around trans people, where safety is an issue, and it becomes a demographic of people that you can demonize and make responsible for whatever list of terrible things that you want to make them responsible for. If someone is saying, yeah, well, sure, I think, you know, trans people don't belong in the military. I think trans people don't deserve to have these rights. I don't think trans people should have gender affirming care. I don't think, you know, that's where I'm like, okay, hold on. Like this is not something that I can be like, okay, cool, you feel that way. Because the way that policy is influenced and the consequences for that, I think are too dire to just kind of flippantly say, oh, well, it's cool.
Well, I guess I'm trying to get at is there a difference? Maybe what I'm trying to understand is are you using like agree to disagree as like it doesn't really matter? Or is it because at the end of that discussion, if you feel strongly about the example you use, trans being in the military, and the federal government decides that they're not going to allow that, what does that in reality mean that what does that look like? And that's, I guess, what I'm kind of driving at here is if because for me, I've always viewed agree to disagree is that. For me, that means, Melanie, if you and I see that issue differently, that you're still my friend. I still care about you. And we're just going to have to agree that I strongly feel one way, you strongly feel the other way, but you're still my friend. Are you feeling like if somebody disagrees with you on a topic like the one that is like, okay, well, I'm done with that friendship. I'm done with that person if you can't see it that way?
No, I think the way that I see agree to disagree, and maybe I need to change my definition of agree to disagree. It has always kind of seemed a little bit like a truce or a stalemate.
Yeah, and I think that's where probably you and I are using the same phrase and meaning it in very different ways.
Okay.
Because for me, agree to disagree does not mean that we're just calling it a truce or calling it a stalemate. It means I'm going to still very strongly advocate for what I believe, and I expect you to continue to strongly advocate for what you believe, to vote the way that you believe. I'm going to vote the way that I believe. For me, agree to disagree has always just meant at the end of it all, I believe you, Melanie, have a good heart, and I want to be your friend, whether we agree on certain topics or not. And I do think that there are times where there are people that I would not agree to disagree with because I don't believe that they have good intent. I think that they have. But again, this is another situation where I really want to give the benefit of the doubt to that people are coming from doing the best they can with the life that they've been born into and that they have. And so that's why I feel like it hurts me when I see relationships cut off, even over in really important issues, because I feel like one of the things that has helped America grow through the years is that people who violently disagreed with each other, and when I use the word violent, let me be clear, that intellectually, strongly disagreed with each other. I'm not talking about physical violence here, but people who really strongly disagreed with each other would somehow find a way to be friends and still keep talking to each other in a way that helped each of them kind of sort things out. And I guess I think about, you know, Melanie, when you and I first met, we had some pretty in-depth conversations about some different social issues that we saw very, very differently mm-hmm. at the time.
Yeah.
And and maybe even to a certain extent still see a little bit differently. But I know that one of the things that I benefited from in our friendship and our discussion was having those conversations with somebody that I felt like I could say what I was thinking out loud to, and you would really disagree with it, and you would tell me why, and you'd back up why, and I could tell you why, and I'd back up my why. And when I know there were a number of times where we left those conversations where I know you were like, oh my word. And I maybe felt similar to that, but it's like, there's still a friendship there, and it's an opportunity to keep dialoguing, and maybe each one of us moved the bar a little bit for the other in a way that allowed us to kind of grow and see a different perspective than we've seen. You know, I know for sure that was, you know, what's happened with a number of different relationships in my life that have, I've started off on one side and either my opinions changed, sometimes their opinions changed. Sometimes neither of our opinions have changed, but we still stay friends. And that's what I think just worries me so much when we can't agree to disagree in the way that I'm defining it as. It's not a, I'm going to give up my point, or we're just going to go ahead and go to a neutral place and we're not going, I'm going to quit. Because I don't, that's, to me, that's capitulation. That's different.
Yeah, I think, and I think that's kind of the way that I was seeing, agree to disagree is usually what you say at the end of a conversation.
Yeah.
It's not typically the thing that you say that inspires more dialogue.
Okay.
So that's kind of the way that I was seeing it, but
that's fair.
But yeah, you and I have had some great conversations where we disagreed pretty vehemently. But the thing that I appreciated about our conversations was, neither one of us was just, you know, slinging mud on a wall.
Yeah.
You know, I think that the relationship, we valued the relationship, the friendship, and so the process of navigating some of the difficult conversations and the difficult disagreements was always undergirded by that friendship and my knowledge of you being open to hearing different things, and me as well. I'm changed my mind. You know, if there's something that you feel like I'm not understanding, and you give me additional information, I've changed my stance on a number of things quite dramatically throughout my life. And I'm always open to understanding something I don't currently understand.
And I think that's what worries me the most about the way that our world is evolving right now, is that we're not creating more open dialogue. We're actually shutting dialogue down. We're taking people, and, you know, the algorithm is moving you towards the people that think exactly the way they're, it's sending you the articles that agree with what you already thought. It's putting you around people that already think what you already thought. And we're sectioning ourselves off into churches with people that agree with us politically, that see things the same way as us politically. We're putting ourselves into clubs that with people that see the same. And it's a very tempting thing to do because it's much more comfortable. It's much more comfortable to be around people that are like, you're a genius. You are so smart. You are so correct in your beliefs. And all those people over there who don't see it the same way you do, they're dumb. They're mean. They want the worst for the United States. They hate the United States. They blah, blah, blah. As opposed to saying, no, these are just people who have a different lens that they're looking through, or they're coming from a different place, or maybe they have information that you don't have that yet, or that you haven't been exposed to due to no fault of your own. You just don't see the world that way. You know, for me, one of a transformational moment for me was when I had a staff member at a previous church that I worked at that was trying to come into the United States legally. Mm-hmm. And watching him try to do the right thing and watching how difficult it was. And this is an incredibly talented person. This is, the United States would be oh so fortunate to have this person as a citizen. I mean, like, I challenge anybody, you know, if I told you this person is like, would be a credit to the United States. And I don't know whether they have their citizenship yet or not. They'd made forward progress, and I was happy to see that. But watching him go through that process really changed my viewpoint a little bit on that. And that's didn't change my viewpoint that I personally think, Now we're talking politics. You know, and maybe I'd be very careful. But, you know, I grew up in a very conservative household, and that's where my tendencies have been throughout the years. But being in that experience changed things a bit for me in the way that I saw this. This is an honest, hardworking person who just genuinely – and then when I went and actually reviewed the data and saw that most – you know, immigrants in the United States are far less likely to commit crime than naturalized than citizens of the United States are. Much – like, does that mean that there are not? Of course it doesn't mean that. Does it mean that there are immigrants who have done heinous things? Of course they have. That's – but the statistics, if you're looking as a population group, the statistics are far less in that area, and they're far more likely to be trying to really live the American dream that so many people around the world desperately want for their families. And so – all that to say, going through that experience really kind of opened my eyes and changed things a little bit for me. And that's what I just would challenge you, no matter which side of the political spectrum you are on, you need to have friends on the other side. You need to have people that you're talking to that look at the world a little bit differently. And if nothing else, what you'll discover more times than not is that most people are genuinely trying to do what they think is right. They genuinely believe the things that they believe. You can say, well, they're ignorant, they don't know this, they don't know that, but they genuinely really believe what they're – and they believe that what they – the policies they believe in would make the United States a better place. And what I believe, having come from a background of covering politics as a reporter, is that I think the best politics is when neither group gets its way. Mm-hmm. When there has to be some form of compromise. Now, that's not always true, okay? There's some things that are black and white, that are right and wrong. There are some things that need to be fought for, and compromise is absolutely the wrong thing to do. So don't mishear me. But I think the majority of the time, when both parties listen to each other instead of going to the extremes of either side, things are better in that sense. And so, like I said, like for me, I really value the friends in my life that view the world differently than I do, that help me see through a lens a little bit better than I did before. Because I'll never be Melanie. I'm not a woman. I didn't grow up where you grew up. I didn't grow up with your parents. I'll never fully see through your lens, and I'll never see through Lucas's lens, you know? I didn't grow up where you grew up. I don't have your parents. I don't have your experience. We were both men, but you grew up in a different generation than me. Mm-hmm. We have a different life experience. But when I get a chance to hear you talk about your life experience, it gives me a little glimpse into your lens. And I realize that you're a human being who loves Orlando, that loves the Whole Life Church, and I love the Whole Life Church, and that we have that in common. And when we start thinking about the commonalities, that's when I think that things begin to get a little bit better, rather than when we focus on everything that we disagree with. And again, back to your point though, Melanie, I do want to say there are things that we should never compromise on, that it's like we will agree to disagree, but that does not mean I am quitting on this. It does not mean I'm throwing in the towel, and it doesn't mean that I'm not going to keep talking about this. It doesn't mean that when we're around that we're not going to have a conversation again about this, that we're – and at some point, maybe it is. Maybe it is that moment where you're like, we have talked to this to a point where I'm starting to not want to be around you, so maybe we do need to go ahead and quit talking about this so that we can talk about other things where we can get along.
Yeah. Yeah. It is really difficult. You know, there are people in my life that I don't talk politics with because I want to maintain the relationship, and it's really sad that it has reached that kind of point of impasse where it's I would be willing to keep the dialogue going, but if someone else says, hey, I don't want to talk about this anymore, you know, you kind of have to decide at that point if you're going to maintain the relationship or not. But I agree with what you said about having other people in your orbit. I think that has, other than, you know, theological challenges and, you know, studying deeply into, you know, embryonic development and those kinds of things that have changed my picture of what it is to be human, especially particular human in a particular way. But the other thing that has really changed is listening to stories and getting to know people and understanding what their life is. And, you know, when I was during my PhD program, when I was teaching, you know, I would read student papers and they would, you know, talk about their experiences and their lives and their struggles and what they'd gone through and the kind of church hurt that they had. And it just broke me to the degree where I said, okay, I can never, ever be in a church that damages people like this ever again. So I think having people around you that you do not understand and being open to understanding more is really beneficial.
Yeah, I really relate to that. You know, one of the things that I did when I was teaching at Middle Tennessee School of Anesthesia is the students would, one of their first assignments was to tell me who you are and why you are and what your relationship is to spirituality. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I got flashbacks when you were talking about reading just some of the trauma that people have experienced with God, with churches, with the people who call themselves Christians, the hurt that they feel, their stories, you know. And, you know, in this class that I taught, less than 7 people out of 70, so less than 10% of the class was Seventh-day Adventist, which means that probably, you know, 90% of the class and I had had from small to very large differences of opinion on theology, on things that I think to be incredibly important to life and to what it means to be a follower of God. And what I really discovered over those 9 years of teaching that class is that I can share what I know to be truth. I can share that. And at the end of the day, you get to decide, and I want to be your friend, mm-hmm. people first. Truth, Jesus first, but Jesus tells me to love my neighbor as myself. Mm-hmm. And so that means that with these people that I have large and small differences with, I don't know if I was 100%, I don't know if I was 100% successful, but I always wanted the students in that class to leave knowing that no matter where they are at, whether they, no matter what religion, world religion they belong to, whether they are atheist, that Ken Wetmore loved them and cared about them and was willing to be in relationship with them in whatever way worked best for them. Mm-hmm. It, you know, and for some of those people, it's been keeping in touch. For others, it hasn't. For some, it's, you know, you get a phone call one day. It's like, hey, I remember that class and I have a question. I want to talk further.
Yeah.
Great. Let's leave the doors open to relationships. Let's not be slamming them shut on people. And that's hugely important to me. And I think that if you want to understand me as a pastor, that's one of the things you really have to understand. For me, you know, there's nothing more precious to God than the human beings that he created. And if you're important to God, then you need to be important to me. And you matter, yeah. No matter what your life experience is, no whether you're involved in things that I deeply disagree with or am on the fence about, or I'm not sure, or I'm like, yeah, that's okay. No matter where you're at on that spectrum of things, Jesus cares about you. You are somebody that Christ gave his life for in my worldview, which means that my job is to be there for you and be with you in whatever capacity you're willing to allow. And I don't want to be, if you want to shut doors, that's your prerogative. But that's what I don't want to be doing that mm-hmm. as much as I can. And again, hypocrisy is a real word in our lives, and we all have our blind spots to how we do it. And I know I've closed the door in people's faces, but it's something that I strive to not do. It's an area that I want to grow in. It's not an area when I say, yeah, I want to do more of that.
Yeah,
it's something I want to do less of. How can I open up relationships as opposed to how can I close them down?
Yeah. During the service, you mentioned something that I really liked, loving those that we classify as unlovable. And the way that I like to think about this is that for someone, I may be the unlovable. And if I'm the unlovable one, it would be nice to know that, you know, somebody is at least trying to love me.
Lucas, even... you could never be unlovable.
Thank you.
I'll second that motion. And I think it's unanimous. I have Randy's proxy vote.
So I would love to offer the same thing to somebody that I may not classify as lovable.
Well, no one is 100% villain. Yeah. Or 100% angel. Like, it would be really great if we had that stark delineation. I could say, oh, I'm going to write you off because you're 100% villain. But that's not the way it works. People are nuanced. People are complex. And what I have found, well, two things. One, I know where I was 20 years ago. And sometimes I imagine myself 20 years ago in dialogue with myself now. And the kind of conversation that we would be having. And it would be a heated conversation because 20 years ago, I felt very strongly that I was right about this particular thing. I've been really privileged to be able to have a lot of experiences and meet lots of people and have access to, you know, a lot of education. And so that has changed me over time, the way that I understand things. But sometimes when I'm having a conversation with someone that I very, very much disagree with, I imagine that it's just myself 20 years ago. And there's something about that that keeps me, I don't know, maybe a little bit more grounded and a little bit more humble. But it also, I know the fact that I have changed means that other people may change as well. You know, if
it's even possible you'll change more.
Oh, I'm counting on it. Yeah. If you don't change and grow, then you die. I was just having this conversation with Albert, and he was talking about, yeah, at my age, I'm still learning stuff. And I was like, yes, I think that's what we're supposed to be doing. but yeah, just having that compassion and never coming to the place where you slam the door so hard in someone's face that the conversation can't happen.
Yeah.
Because I think that there's potential in anyone for being willing to revise their position on something. The other thing that I have to ask myself, and I wonder this sometimes, because I think there are some people who have a really strong political opinion, especially on a social issue, and systemically they will vote for a particular way, or they will have things to say about a particular demographic. But then those same people are people that you interact with, you know, personally. And, you know, for example, if you feel really, really strongly that no one should be in the United States who is undocumented, but then you sit next to someone in church or at a restaurant or in a park or wherever who is undocumented and you hear their story, if the way that you engage with that person one-on-one personally does not match your political position on that, I have to ask, like, what is it about that discrepancy between how you will treat that person in person versus how you will treat that person, you know, with your vote?
Sure. And, you know, and that's where there's these really rich discussions to be had that you and I have had on these kind of topics, where, you know, I think that my pushback is you can believe in a policy that says, hey, I think that there is a correct way to come into the United States, and yet I am going to treat every person I come in contact with dignity, and that there is a process for how things are handled. So I think you could have that kind of a discussion. And that's where I feel like, you know, where things actually can move forward, where we can go, okay, yeah, I'm seeing things a little bit differently than I did before. We can talk about these different things. But, you know, I just, for me, I go back to, you know, the verses that come before Romans 13, where Paul's in the verses right before talking about being subject to human authority. God says, bless those who persecute you. Don't curse them. Pray that God will bless them. And I recognize, like, right now, I don't feel like I'm being persecuted. So I don't know what it's like to be in the persecuted seat at this moment in the same way that some people do. But this isn't something I just wrote out myself. This is coming from Paul, who was, you know, a Jewish Roman citizen in a Roman society that at times was oppressive to Christians in Paul's time. You know, Jesus said the same thing, love your enemies, which he definitely was in a minority position. So this is coming from people. That's what I believe very firmly. I thought about talking about Bonhoeffer this week because he was one that definitely had an alternate view of Romans 13, but I didn't want to get tied up into all the intricacies of the fact that he decided to take violence into his own hands. Mm-hmm. And he felt like it was justified to try to do that.
He was part of a plot to assassinate Hitler.
He was.
Just for people who don't know the story.
Yeah. And he was very outspoken. He started off and then moved more and more outspoken against the Nazi regime. And so for me, I prefer for me the way of Christ, which was turn the other cheek and be disobedient in a nonviolent way. Mm-hmm. That's what I believe is the correct way. I believe that's the way of Christ.
Lucas, do we have questions?
We do, yes. So the first one is from Debbie. We have been talking a little bit about this. How do we share God's love and connect with others in a world with so many different realities and worldviews?
You know, I think that's kind of what we've been talking about.
Yep.
So Debbie, I hope you kind of have your answer from a little earlier, because I don't know that I have a whole lot more to say on that. But I would tell you, Debbie, it's hard. I don't think it's the easy way. I think the easy way is to hate people, to demonize, to villainize, I think that's the easy way. And I think the difficult thing is trying to figure out how to love those that are making it very hard for you to love them because they're being so horrible to you and to the people you love and care about. So I think for me, it's just a daily decision where I want to just ask God every day, hey, help me to be kind and loving, even when that's not what I feel. Show me how to do that.
Second one from Pim. Ken pointed out we shouldn't be surprised there are consequences when we do stand up to abuse. Is that the cost of loving your neighbor?
Yeah, it's a steep cost. I don't think it's one that should be minimized, but yeah, I think that when we stand up for what's right, I think, let me just speak for myself. I think that when I stand up for what's right, I don't want to lose my job. I don't want to have people hate me. I don't want this. And I think a lot of us are like, we want to do what's right without the consequences that come along sometimes with doing what's right. Not that those are correct consequences, we want that world that where there's justice and where doing the right thing is what pays. And it ends like a good movie with truth and happiness and love winning. And so that's the reality that when we stand up for what we believe and what we think of, there can and often will be consequences that don't always have the happy ending on this earth kind of thing to it.
Yeah.
The last one is anonymous question. The law of God and Jesus' teachings are clear. Love God, love others, feed the hungry, protect the oppressed, do justice, love mercy, and etc. How are Christians today missing this by supporting our current government that goes against what is clearly God's will?
Yeah, I think this goes back to what we were again talking about earlier. There are There are good Christians on both sides of the political aisle who very much can't understand how you can be a Christian and have the policies that you have on this side or the policies that you can't on the other. And I do believe that there genuinely are policies on both sides that are diametrically opposed to Christian principle. And I think that if we feel strongly about something, that we should act, we should go ahead and vote and encourage other people to vote and to rally peaceably for the things that we believe in and care about that can make the difference. So, yeah. Anything you want to add, Melanie?
That's a tough question to answer for someone else. I think what it comes down to is our interpretation of what gospel is. Mm-hmm. You know, who is this good news for? If it's only good news for, you know, some people and bad news for others, I think we have to evaluate whether it's actually good news. I also think it's... Yeah, this is it is a very tough thing.
I think just as important as what we are standing for and why we are standing for is how we are doing this, and it's by loving first.
Yeah. And I think we have to be honest with ourselves about whether it is actually loving. And I know that you know, there were times in my life where somebody would, when I was in a place where I thought very differently, I'd have somebody come and tell me, this is not loving, this is not loving. And it used to make me really angry. And I had all kinds of rationalizations for it, why that didn't count in that situation or this situation. And I finally had to come to grips with, you know, my own theology and my own version of the gospel and look at it in terms of the way that it was playing out and whether or not it was actually loving. And I finally had to come to the place where I realized this is not loving. You know, I don't see Jesus participating in this. I don't see this being honoring the image of God and other people. And so, yeah, I mean, and of course, that's something that each person has to do individually. But that time staring in the mirror sometimes can be really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Oh, this is normally where Randy would come in and say something brilliant to wrap
everything
up.
So what do we have coming up?
Oh, there we go. Thank you. Well, we do have our final great question coming up. We gave Ken a really easy one this week.
Is not concerned at all.
Not at all.
Oh, yeah. So,
yeah, this one is basically, didn't God say that adultery is not to be had in the Ten Commandments, and yet God seems to not only allow but sometimes endorse polygamy. I don't think that's not exactly how the question was asked, but that's, I think, what it was getting at. And it cites David, where God basically says, I even gave you your master's house and his wives. So, mm-hmm. And if you'd wanted more, I would have given you more. Interestingly, by the way, person who asked this question, you're citing a text where God is actually reprimanding David for adultery. So,
Yeah.
So that's an interesting little tension that we will be delighted to hear you work out in your sermon next week.
Always fun. Yeah. Never ever feel worried at all during Great Question Week.
Yeah.
Weeks, month.
I noticed that it comes at the same time as Connected, so it unfortunately has to only be three parts.
Yeah, really. We'll have to see what we can do for future years. I think there was one year where I did five of them, so I think I made up that year for,
oh, gotcha.
For the last two.
All right. Well, stay tuned for 2026. I guess we'll see.
We'll see.
And I just want to say kudos for the choir.
Oh, yeah.
The choir was excellent.
Choir did fantastic job. I loved the energy and they sounded great.
Yeah. And if you want to join the choir.
That's right.
Registrations are open.
Yep.
Wycliffe at wholelife.church.
That's right.
Watch for the show notes.
And maybe one more thing is that we did cards for warriors. We had 500 cards that we were filling out for people who are going through health struggles and have requested prayer. And we have done 400. There's 100 people left who really would like a card from you. And so if you'd like to help make that happen, come a little early to church, stay a little late after church next week, and we will get those last 100 cards finished up and sent out so that all 500 people who need some encouragement going through the health challenges that they're facing can get that card. And we'll finish that up this Sabbath.
Yeah. Great. All right. Well, if you're still listening, thanks for bearing with us in Randy's absence.
We miss you, Randy.
We miss you, Randy. Hope you're having a great time. And as far as the rest of you, hope you have a great week.